Today is September 4th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover CIA Director John Ratcliffe's unannounced Moscow trip and reporting that Putin fears being, quote, hung if he concedes on the Donbass, Germany's formal attribution of a Russian sabotage plot at the Leipzig-Halle airport, and the G20 finance summit where China alone blocked a communique backed by 90 of 91 member states. Start with the number that reframes everything, 90 of 91. That's how many G20 countries backed a joint communique on trade and debt rules. China blocked it alone. But the more consequential number this week is smaller and more personal. It's the reported words attributed to Vladimir Putin himself, telling his inner circle that they will hang him if he settles for anything less than full control of the Donbass. According to The Economist's sourcing, that single line does more to explain Russian negotiating posture than any battlefield map. This isn't a war being fought over territory anymore, at least not only that. It's a war being fought over regime survival, and that changes the incentive structure entirely. Against that backdrop, CIA Director John Ratcliffe made an unannounced trip to Moscow on August 25th, meeting FSB Chief Alexander Bortnikov and the head of Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service directly, bypassing the stalled Witkoff-Kushner diplomatic channel entirely. The strategic calculus here is that Washington has apparently concluded Russian military leadership has been overstating battlefield success to Putin, and that the people best positioned to puncture that narrative are the intelligence chiefs who brief him daily, not frontline generals with incentive to shade the truth upward. It's a bet that economic reality, a war Russia cannot sustain indefinitely, lands harder coming from Bortnikov than from a ceasefire memo. This is the first unannounced CIA director visit to Russia since Director Burns' warning trip in the winter of 2021, and that history is not encouraging. Burns' warning failed to deter the 2022 invasion. A planned Putin-Ratcliffe sit-down afterward was reportedly canceled once Moscow reviewed the actual American terms, which it read as amounting to Ukrainian capitulation. Shortly after, per the Moscow Times, Putin signed a decree expanding his own protective service for the first time since 2022, a small, telling signal of a leader thinking about his own security, not just the war's trajectory. More importantly, this intelligence channel diplomacy is running on a track that actively contradicts Europe's posture. At the G20 Finance Ministers' Summit, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent told Russian Finance Minister Anton Siluanov that sanctions stay until the war ends, a normalization gesture just by holding the conversation, and European officials responded by making sure Siluanov was excluded from the group photo. That's not a footnote. It's a visible crack in the transatlantic front, with Washington engaging and Europe insisting on continued isolation. At the exact moment, Zelensky's intelligence, which Ukraine analyst Peter Zeihan rates as roughly 90% historically reliable, points to a fourth Russian mobilization wave of around 300,000 personnel planned for September, drawn disproportionately from the Far East and ethnic minority republics to insulate Moscow and St. Petersburg from the war's visible cost. Building on that fracture, Europe absorbed what may be the most significant single escalation of the week, a hybrid attack that crossed from the deniable into the attributable. Ursula von der Leyen, standing with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte, stated that the German government has formally attributed an attempted attack on cargo planes at Leipzig-Halle Airport, a major DHL freight hub, to Russian operatives using military-grade material. Her own words were that this could have caused enormous damage and possibly loss of life on EU soil. The shifting geography of power here isn't a map of front lines in Ukraine. It's a map of European logistics nodes now being treated as frontline targets. That's the doctrinal shift to watch. Everyday infrastructure, airports, rail yards, undersea cables, reclassified as contested terrain. Medvedev denied it, called it fabricated, and threatened missile strikes on German military production sites. Putin, in Bishkek, shifted blame onto Chancellor Merz's domestic unpopularity rather than engaging the accusation directly. EU foreign policy chief Kaja Kallas called it state-sponsored terrorism outright and confirmed roughly 1,600 new sanctions listings targeting Russia's military-industrial complex are in the pipeline. And yet, Atlantic Council fellow Peter Dickinson assessed Germany's actual response, closing the Bonn consulate, ending the Berlin-Russia House agreement, as symbolically underweight relative to the scale of the alleged plot. The strategic calculus here is uncomfortable. a response too small to deter risks reading as an invitation to escalate further, echoing the pattern after the 2022 Nord Stream sabotage, where attribution rarely translated into consequence. The money is real, even if the deterrent signal is muddled. Rutte cited 139 billion euros in additional 2025 European and Canadian defense spending and a pledge of at least 70 billion euros annually in Ukraine support through 2026. Von der Leyen pointed to an 800 billion euro EU defense investment plan, including a 150 billion euro instrument, with 8.5 billion euros already disbursed since June from a 90 billion euro Ukraine loan facility. Meanwhile, Turkey hosted a 90-minute closed session between Erdogan and Putin at the SCO summit, reaffirming Ankara's offer to broker direct talks. A reminder that diplomatic fragmentation is running in parallel with sanctions escalation, not in sequence with it. More importantly, the same fracture is visible one level up in the U.S.-China relationship. Best since 90 of 91 framing at the G20 wasn't just about one bloc communique. The disputed clauses included free navigation language for the Strait of Hormuz, a trade imbalance monitoring task force, and expanded IMF authority over debt restructuring. Bessent labeled China a non-market economy running the world's largest unsustainable current account surplus. That's sharp language, but Kurt Campbell's account, given separately to CSIS, suggests it isn't backed by a coherent strategy. The Trump administration's China policy lacks a unifying document, because the National Security Council's coordinating function has been hollowed out, leaving Pentagon hawks, commercial dealmakers, and a middle faction pulling in different directions. Jessica Chen Weiss goes further, arguing Trump has made unreciprocated concessions on Taiwan rhetoric and arms sales without securing any parallel concession from Beijing in return. The shifting geography of power on the rare earths front tells a similar story of miscalculation running both directions. China's 2025 export controls applied globally, not just to the U.S., which Weiss suggests may be a Chinese own goal. Japan has cut its reliance on Chinese rare earths and magnets from roughly 90% to 60% since the 2010 crisis. Weiss cites Bessent's own remark that China, quote, holds a pair of twos, as evidence of a flawed assumption of American escalation dominance. And Beijing shows no sign of distancing itself from Moscow. Putin and Xi held their second bilateral meeting of the year in Bishkek, discussing the long-stalled Power of Siberia 2 pipeline, with the Kremlin downplaying Ukraine's role in those talks as discussed only, quote, in passing. Two other threads are worth a shorter mention. In the Western Hemisphere, Washington has pivoted its counter-narcotics strategy from cartel decapitation toward institutional targeting. Colombia seized 445.9 tons of cocaine in 2025, up 59.4% year-on-year, joined the U.S.-led counter-cartel coalition, and received a pledged $1 billion security package, while Mexico's government resists integration and instead faces visa revocations and indictments, including of a sitting governor. And in the Middle East, the U.S.-Iran strike cycle has resumed after roughly a month's pause, with a U.S. strike on an alleged Hormuz mining operation followed by an Iranian missile response against a base in Jordan. Directly tied to the same Strait of Hormuz language, China just blocked at the G20. The specific signal to watch in the next 48 hours, whether Bortnikov or the SVR chief actually relay Ratcliffe's economic warnings up to Putin, and whether Russia's intensified bombardment of Kyiv, now on its seventh consecutive day per Atlantic Council reporting, continues past the immediate window heading toward the September 20th State Duma election, the date analysts increasingly flag as the likely trigger point for that 300,000-person mobilization wave. Any softening or hardening of that bombardment pattern in the next 2 days will tell us more about whether the intelligence channel is landing than anything said publicly in Moscow or Washington. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.